Then he arose quickly, like a seafarer who all at once seeth the land, and he shouted for joy, for he saw a new truth, and he spake thus to his heart, A light hath dawned upon me. I need companions, living ones, not dead companions and corpses which I carry with me where I will. But I need living companions who will follow me because they want to follow themselves, and to the place where I will. A light hath dawned upon me. Not to the people is Zarathustra to speak, but to companions. Zarathustra shall not be the herd's herdsman and hound. To allure many from the herd, for that purpose have I come. The people and the herd must be angry with me. A robber shall Zarathustra be called by the herdsmen. Herdsmen, I say, but they call themselves the good and just. Herdsmen, I say, but they call themselves the believers in the orthodox belief. Behold the good and just. Whom do they hate most? Him who breaketh up their tables of values, the breaker, the law-breaker. He, however, is the creator. Behold the believers of all beliefs. Whom do they hate most? Him who breaketh up their tables of values, the breaker, the law-breaker. He, however, is the creator. Companions the creator seeketh, not corpses, and not herds or believers either. Fellow creators the creator seeketh, those who grave new values on new tables. Companions the creator seeketh, and fellow reapers, for everything is ripe for the harvest with him. But he lacketh the 100 sickles, so he plucketh the ears of corn and is vexed. Companions the creator seeketh, and such as know how to whet their sickles. Destroyers will they be called, and despisers of good and evil, but they are the reapers and rejoicers. Fellow creators Zarathustra seeketh, fellow reapers and fellow rejoicers Zarathustra seeketh. What hath he to do with herds and herdsmen and corpses? And thou, my first companion, rest in peace. Well have I buried thee in thy hollow tree, well have I hid thee from the wolves. But I part from thee, the time hath arrived. Twixt rosy dawn and rosy dawn there came unto me a new truth. I am not to be a herdsman, I am not to be a grave digger. Not any more will I discourse unto the people, for the last time have I spoken unto the dead. With the creators, the reapers, and the rejoicers will I associate, the rainbow will I show them, and all the stairs to the Superman. To the lone dwellers will I sing my song, and to the twain dwellers, and unto him who hath still ears for the unheard, will I make the heart heavy with my happiness. I make for my goal, I follow my course, over the loitering and tardy will I leap, thus let my ongoing be their downgoing. 10. This had Zarathustra said to his heart when the sun stood at noontide. Then he looked inquiringly aloft, for he heard above him the sharp call of a bird. And behold, an eagle swept through the air in wide circles, and on it hung a serpent, not like a prey, but like a friend, for it kept itself coiled round the eagle's neck. They are mine animals, said Zarathustra, and rejoiced in his heart. The proudest animal under the sun, and the wisest animal under the sun. They have come out to reconnoitre. They want to know whether Zarathustra still liveth. Verily, do I still live? More dangerous have I found it among men than among animals. In dangerous paths goeth Zarathustra. Let mine animals lead me. When Zarathustra had said this, he remembered the words of the saint in the forest. And he sighed and spake thus to his heart, Would that I were wiser! Would that I were wise from the very heart, like my serpent! But I am asking the impossible. Therefore do I ask my pride to go always with my wisdom. And if my wisdom should some day forsake me, alas, it loveth to fly away, may my pride then fly with my folly. Thus began Zarathustra's down-going. Zarathustra's Discourses. 1. The Three Metamorphoses. Three metamorphoses of the spirit do I designate to you. How the spirit becometh a camel, the camel a lion, and the lion at last a child. Many heavy things are there for the spirit, the strong, load-bearing spirit in which reverence dwelleth, for the heavy and the heaviest longeth its strength. What is heavy? So asketh the load-bearing spirit. Then kneeleth it down like the camel, and wanteth to be well laden. What is the heaviest thing, ye heroes, asketh the load-bearing spirit, that I may take it upon me and rejoice in my strength? Is it not this, to humiliate oneself in order to mortify one's pride, to exhibit one's folly in order to mock at one's wisdom? Or is it this, to desert our cause when it celebrateth its triumph, to ascend high mountains to tempt the tempter? Or is it this, to feed on the acorns and grass of knowledge, and for the sake of truth to suffer hunger of soul? Or is it this, to be sick and dismiss comforters, and make friends of the deaf, who never hear thy requests? Or is it this, to go into foul water when it is the water of truth, and not disclaim cold frogs and hot toads? Or is it this, to love those who despise us, and give one's hand to the phantom when it is going to frighten us? All these heaviest things the load-bearing spirit taketh upon itself, and, like the camel, which, when laden, hasteneth into the wilderness, so hasteneth the spirit into its wilderness. But in the loneliest wilderness happeneth the second metamorphosis. Here the spirit becometh a lion. Freedom will it capture, and lordship in its own wilderness. Its last lord it here seeketh. Hostile will it be to him, and to its last god. For victory will it struggle with the great dragon. What is the great dragon which the spirit is no longer inclined to call lord and god? Thou shalt is the great dragon called, but the spirit of the lion saith, I will. Thou shalt lieth in its path, sparkling with gold, a scale-covered beast, and on every scale glittereth golden, thou shalt. The values of 1,000 years glitter on those scales, and thus speaketh the mightiest of all dragons, all the values of things glitter on me. All values have already been created, and all created values do I represent. Verily there shall be no I will any more. Thus speaketh the dragon. My brethren, wherefore is there need of the lion in the spirit? Why sufficeth not the beast of burden, which renounceth and is reverent? To create new values, that even the lion cannot yet accomplish, but to create itself freedom for new creating, that can the might of the lion do. To create itself freedom and give a holy nay, even unto duty, for that, my brethren, there is need of the lion. To assume the right to new values, that is the most formidable assumption for a load-bearing and reverent spirit. Verily, unto such a spirit it is praying, and the work of a beast of prey. At its holiest it once loved, thou shalt. Now it is forced to find illusion and arbitrariness, even in the holiest things, that it may capture freedom from its love. The lion is needed for this capture. But tell me, my brethren, what the child can do, which even the lion could not do. Why hath the praying lion still to become a child? Innocence is the child, and forgetfulness, a new beginning, a game, a self-rolling wheel, a first movement, a holy yea. Aye, for the game of creating, my brethren, there is needed a holy yea unto life. Its own will willeth now the spirit. His own world winneth the world's outcast. Three metamorphoses of the spirit have I designated to you. How the spirit became a camel, the camel a lion, and the lion at last a child. Thus spake Zarathustra, and at that time he abode in the town which is called the Pied Cow. 2. The Academic Chairs of Virtue. People commended unto Zarathustra a wise man, as one who could discourse well about sleep and virtue. Greatly was he honoured and rewarded for it, and all the youths sat before his chair. To him went Zarathustra, and sat among the youths before his chair. And thus spake the wise man. Respect and modesty in presence of sleep, that is the first thing, and to go out of the way of all who sleep badly and keep awake at night. Modest is even the thief in presence of sleep. He always stealeth softly through the night. Immodest, however, is the night watchman. Immodestly he carrieth his horn. No small art is it to sleep. It is necessary for that purpose to keep awake all day. 10 times a day must thou overcome thyself. That causeth wholesome weariness, and is poppy to the soul. 10 times must thou reconcile again with thyself, for overcoming is bitterness, and badly sleep the unreconciled. 10 truths must thou find during the day, otherwise wilt thou seek truth during the night, and thy soul will have been hungry. 10 times must thou laugh during the day, and be cheerful, otherwise thy stomach, the father of affliction, will disturb thee in the night. Few people know it, but one must have all the virtues in order to sleep well. Shall I bear false witness? Shall I commit adultery? Shall I covet my neighbour's maidservant? All that would ill accord with good sleep. And even if one have all the virtues, there is still one thing needful, to send the virtues themselves to sleep at the right time. That they may not quarrel with one another, the good females, and about thee, thou unhappy one. Peace with God and thy neighbour, so desireth good sleep, and peace also with thy neighbour's devil, otherwise it will haunt thee in the night. Honour to the government and obedience, and also to the crooked government, so desireth good sleep. How can I help it if power like to walk on crooked legs? He who leadeth his sheep to the greenest pasture shall always be for me the best shepherd, so doth it accord with good sleep. Many honours I want not, nor great treasures, they excite the spleen. But it is bad sleeping without a good name and a little treasure. A small company is more welcome to me than a bad one, but they must come and go at the right time. So doth it accord with good sleep. Well also do the poor in spirit please me. They promote sleep. Blessed are they, especially if one always give in to them. Thus passeth the day unto the virtuous. When night cometh, then take I good care not to summon sleep. It disliketh to be summoned. Sleep, the lord of the virtues. But I think of what I have done and thought during the day. Thus ruminating, patient as a cow, I ask myself, what were thy 10 overcomings? And what were the 10 reconciliations, and the 10 truths, and the 10 laughters with which my heart enjoyed itself? Thus pondering and cradled by 40 thoughts, it overtaketh me all at once. Sleep, the unsummoned, the lord of the virtues. Sleep tappeth on mine eye, and it turneth heavy. Sleep toucheth my mouth, and it remaineth open. Verily on soft souls doth it come to me, the dearest of thieves, and stealeth from me my thoughts. Stupid do I then stand, like this academic chair. But not much longer do I then stand. I already lie. When Zarathustra heard the wise man thus speak, he laughed in his heart, for thereby had a light dawned upon him, and thus spake he to his heart. A fool seemeth this wise man with his 40 thoughts, but I believe he knoweth well how to sleep. Happy even is he who liveth near this wise man. Such sleep is contagious. Even through a thick wall it is contagious. A magic resideth even in his academic chair, and not in vain did the youth sit before the preacher of virtue. His wisdom is to keep awake in order to sleep well, and verily, if life had no sense, and had I to choose nonsense, this would be the desirablest nonsense for me also. Now know I well what people sought formerly above all else when they sought teachers of virtue. Good sleep they sought for themselves, and poppy-head virtues to promote it. To all those belauded sages of the academic chairs, wisdom was sleep without dreams. They knew no higher significance of life. Even at present, to be sure, there are some like this preacher of virtue, and not always so honourable, but their time is past, and not much longer do they stand. There they already lie. Blessed are those drowsy ones, for they shall soon nod to sleep. Thus spake Zarathustra. 3. Backworlds Men. Once on a time, Zarathustra also cast his fancy beyond man, like all backworlds men. The work of a suffering and tortured god did the world then seem to me. The dream and diction of a god did the world then seem to me, coloured vapours before the eyes of a divinely dissatisfied one. Good and evil, and joy and woe, and I and thou, coloured vapours did they seem to me before creative eyes. The Creator wished to look away from himself. Thereupon he created the world. Intoxicating joy is it for the sufferer to look away from his suffering and forget himself. Intoxicating joy and self-forgetting did the world once seem to me. This world, the eternally imperfect, an eternal contradiction's image and imperfect image, an intoxicating joy to its imperfect creator, thus did the world once seem to me. Thus, once on a time, did I also cast my fancy beyond man, like all backworlds men. Beyond man, forsooth? Ah, ye brethren, that God whom I created was human work and human madness, like all the gods. A man was he, and only a poor fragment of a man, and ego. Out of mine own ashes and glow it came unto me, that phantom, and verily it came not unto me from the beyond. What happened, my brethren? I surpassed myself, the suffering one. I carried mine own ashes to the mountain. A brighter flame I contrived for myself, and lo, thereupon the phantom withdrew from me. To me, the convalescent, would it now be suffering and torment to believe in such phantoms? Suffering would it now be to me, and humiliation? Thus speak I to backworlds men. Suffering was it, and impotence, that created all backworlds, and the short madness of happiness, which only the greatest sufferer experienceth. Weariness, which seeketh to get to the ultimate with one leap, with a death leap, a poor ignorant weariness, unwilling even to will any longer, that created all gods and back worlds. Believe me, my brethren, it was the body which despaired of the body. It groped with the fingers of the infatuated spirit at the ultimate walls. Believe me, my brethren, it was the body which despaired of the earth. It heard the bowels of existence speaking unto it. And then it sought to get through the ultimate walls with its head, and not with its head only, into the other world. But that other world is well concealed from man, that dehumanized, inhuman world, which is a celestial naught, and the bowels of existence do not speak unto man except as man. Verily, it is difficult to prove all being, and hard to make it speak. Tell me, ye brethren, is not the strangest of all things best proved? Yea, this ego, with its contradiction and perplexity, speaketh most uprightly of its being. This creating, willing, evaluing ego, which is the measure and value of things. And this most upright existence, the ego, it speaketh of the body, and still implieth the body, even when it museth and raveth and fluttereth with broken wings. Always more uprightly learneth it to speak, the ego, and the more it learneth, the more doth it find titles and honours for the body and the earth. A new pride taught me mine ego, and that teach I unto men, no longer to thrust one's head into the sand of celestial things, but to carry it freely, a terrestrial head, which giveth meaning to the earth. A new will teach I unto men, to choose that path which man hath followed blindly and to approve of it, and no longer to slink aside from it, like the sick and perishing. The sick and perishing, it was they who despised the body and the earth, and invented the heavenly world, and the redeeming blood drops. But even those sweet and sad poisons they borrowed from the body and the earth. From their misery they sought escape, and the stars were too remote for them. Then they sighed, "Oh, that there were heavenly paths by which to steal into another existence and into happiness!" Then they contrived for themselves their bypaths and bloody drafts. Beyond the sphere of their body and this earth, they now fancied themselves transported, these ungrateful ones. But to what did they owe the convulsion and rapture of their transport? To their body and this earth. Gentle is Zarathustra to the sickly. Verily, he is not indignant at their modes of consolation and ingratitude. May they become convalescents and overcomers, and create higher bodies for themselves. Neither is Zarathustra indignant at a convalescent who looketh tenderly on his delusions, and at midnight stealeth round the grave of his god, but sickness and a sick frame remain even in his tears. Many sickly ones have there always been among those who muse and languish for God. Violently they hate the discerning ones, and the latest of virtues, which is uprightness. Backward they always gaze toward dark ages. Then, indeed, were delusion and faith something different. Raving of the reason was likeness to God, and doubt was sin. Too well do I know those godlike ones. They insist on being believed in, and the doubt is sin. Too well also do I know what they themselves most believe in. Verily, not in back worlds and redeeming blood drops, but in the body do they also believe most, and their own body is for them the thing in itself. But it is a sickly thing to them, and gladly would they get out of their skin. Therefore hearken they to the preachers of death, and themselves preach backworlds. Hearken rather, my brethren, to the voice of the healthy body. It is a more upright and pure voice. More uprightly and purely speaketh the healthy body, perfect and square built, and it speaketh of the meaning of the earth. Thus spake Zarathustra. 4. The Despisers of the Body. To the despisers of the body will I speak my word. I wish them neither to learn afresh nor teach anew, but only to bid farewell to their own bodies, and thus be dumb. Body am I and soul, so saith the child, and why should one not speak like children? But the awakened one, the knowing one, saith, Body am I entirely, and nothing more, and soul is only the name of something in the body. The body is a big sagacity, a plurality with one sense, a war and a peace, a flock and a shepherd. An instrument of thy body is also thy little sagacity, my brother, which thou callest spirit, a little instrument and plaything of thy big sagacity. Ego, sayest thou, and art proud of that word, but the greater thing, in which thou art unwilling to believe, is thy body with its big sagacity. It saith not, ego, but doeth it. What the sense feeleth, what the spirit discerneth, hath never its end in itself. But sense and spirit would fain persuade thee that they are the end of all things, so vain are they. Instruments and playthings are sense and spirit. Behind them there is still the self. The self seeketh with the eyes of the senses. It hearkeneth also with the ears of the spirit. Ever hearkeneth the self, and seeketh. It compareth, mastereth, conquereth, and destroyeth. It ruleth, and is also the ego's ruler. Behind thy thoughts and feelings, my brother, there is a mighty lord, an unknown sage. It is called self. It dwelleth in thy body. It is thy body. There is more sagacity in thy body than in thy best wisdom. And who then knoweth why thy body requireth just thy best wisdom? Thyself laugheth at thine ego, and its proud prancings. What are these prancings and flights of thought unto me, it saith to itself, a byway to my purpose? I am the leading string of the ego and the prompter of its notions. The self saith unto the ego, feel pain, and thereupon it suffereth, and thinketh how it may put an end thereto, and for that very purpose it is meant to think. The self saith unto the ego, feel pleasure, thereupon it rejoiceth, and thinketh how it may oft times rejoice, and for that very purpose it is meant to think. To the despisers of the body will I speak a word. That they despise is caused by their esteem. What is it that created esteeming and despising and worth and will? The creating self created for itself esteeming and despising. It created for itself joy and woe. The creating body created for itself spirit as a hand to its will. Even in your folly and despising, ye each serve yourself, ye despisers of the body. I tell you, your very self wanteth to die, and turneth away from life. No longer can yourself do that which it desireth most, create beyond itself. That is what it desireth most. That is all its fervour. But it is now too late to do so. So yourself wisheth to succumb, ye despisers of the body. To succumb, so wisheth yourself, and therefore have ye become despisers of the body, for ye can no longer create beyond yourselves. And therefore are ye now angry with life, and with the earth, and unconscious envy is in the sidelong look of your contempt. I go not your way, ye despisers of the body, ye are no bridges for me to the Superman. Thus spake Zarathustra. 5. Joys and Passions. My brother, when thou hast a virtue, and it is thine own virtue, thou hast it in common with no one. To be sure, thou wouldst call it by name and caress it, thou wouldst pull its ears and amuse thyself with it. And lo, then hast thou its name in common with the people, and hast thou become one of the people, and the herd, with thy virtue. Better for thee to say, ineffable is it, and nameless, that which is pain and sweetness to my soul, and also the hunger of my bowels. Let thy virtue be too high for the familiarity of names, and if thou must speak of it, be not ashamed to stammer about it. Thus speak and stammer, that is my good, that do I love, thus doth it please me entirely, thus only do I desire the good. Not as the law of a god do I desire it, not as a human law or a human need do I desire it. It is not to be a guidepost for me to super-earths and paradises. An earthly virtue is it which I love. Little prudence is therein, and the least everyday wisdom. But that bird built its nest beside me, therefore I love and cherish it. Now sitteth it beside me on its golden eggs. Thus shouldst thou stammer and praise thy virtue. Once hadst thou passions and calledst them evil, but now hast thou only thy virtues, they grew out of thy passions. Thou implantedst thy highest aim into the heart of those passions, then became they thy virtues and joys. And though thou wert of the race of the hot-tempered, or of the voluptuous, or of the fanatical, or the vindictive, all thy passions in the end became virtues, and all thy devils angels. Once hadst thou wild dogs in thy cellar, but they changed at last into birds and charming songstresses. Out of thy poisons brewedst thou balsam for thyself, thy cow, affliction, milkedst thou, now drinketh thou the sweet milk of her udder. And nothing evil groweth in thee any longer, unless it be the evil that groweth out of the conflict of thy virtues. My brother, if thou be fortunate, then wilt thou have one virtue and no more. Thus goest thou easier over the bridge. Illustrious is it to have many virtues, but a hard lot, and many a one hath gone into the wilderness and killed himself, because he was weary of being the battle and battlefield of virtues. My brother, are war and battle evil? Necessary, however, is the evil. Necessary are the envy and the distrust and the backbiting among the virtues. Lo, how each of thy virtues is covetous of the highest place. It wanteth thy whole spirit to be its herald. It wanteth thy whole power in wrath, hatred, and love. Jealous is every virtue of the others, and a dreadful thing is jealousy. Even virtues may succumb by jealousy. He whom the flame of jealousy encompasseth, turneth at last, like the scorpion, the poisoned sting against himself. Ah, my brother, hast thou never seen a virtue backbite and stab itself? Man is something that hath to be surpassed, and therefore shalt thou love thy virtues, for thou wilt succumb by them. Thus spake Zarathustra. 6. The Pale Criminal. Ye do not mean to slay, ye judges and sacrificers, until the animal hath bowed its head. Lo, the pale criminal hath bowed his head. Out of his eye speaketh the great contempt. Mine ego is something which is to be surpassed. Mine ego is to me the great contempt of man. So speaketh it out of that eye. When he judged himself, that was his supreme moment. Let not the exalted one relapse again into his low estate. There is no salvation for him who thus suffereth from himself, unless it be speedy death. Your slaying, ye judges, shall be pity, and not revenge. And in that ye slay, see to it that ye yourselves justify life. It is not enough that ye should reconcile with him whom ye slay. Let your sorrow be love to the Superman. Thus will ye justify your own survival. Enemy shall ye say, but not villain. Invalid shall ye say, but not wretch. Fool shall ye say, but not sinner. And thou, red judge, if thou would say audibly all thou hast done in thought, then would everyone cry, away with the nastiness and the virulent reptile. But one thing is the thought, another thing is the deed, and another thing is the idea of the deed. The wheel of causality doth not roll between them. An idea made this pale man pale. Adequate was he for his deed when he did it, but the idea of it he could not endure when it was done. Evermore did he now see himself as the doer of one deed. Madness, I call this. The exception reversed itself to the rule in him. The streak of chalk bewitcheth the hen. The stroke he struck bewitched his weak reason. Madness after the deed, I call this. Hearken, ye judges, there is another madness besides, and it is before the deed. Ah, ye have not gone deep enough into this soul. Thus speaketh the red judge. Why did this criminal commit murder? He meant to rob. I tell you, however, that his soul wanted blood, not booty. He thirsted for the happiness of the knife. But his weak reason understood not this madness, and it persuaded him. What matter about blood? It said. Wishest thou not, at least, to make booty thereby, or take revenge? And he hearkened unto his weak reason. Like lead lay its words upon him. Thereupon he robbed when he murdered. He did not mean to be ashamed of his madness. And now once more lieth the lead of his guilt upon him, and once more is his weak reason so benumbed, so paralyzed, and so dull. Could he only shake his head, then would his burden roll off? But who shaketh that head? What is this man? A mass of diseases that reach out into the world through the spirit. There they want to get their prey. What is this man? A coil of wild serpents that are seldom at peace among themselves. So they go forth apart, and seek prey in the world. Look at that poor body. what it suffered and craved, the poor soul interpreted to itself. It interpreted it as murderous desire and eagerness for the happiness of the knife. Him who now turneth sick, the evil overtaketh, which is now the evil. He seeketh to cause pain with that which causeth him pain. But there have been other ages, and another evil and good. Once was doubt evil, and the will to self. Then the invalid became a heretic or sorcerer. As heretic or sorcerer he suffered, and sought to cause suffering. But this will not enter your ears. It hurteth your good people, ye tell me. But what doth it matter to me about your good people? Many things in your good people cause me disgust, and verily not their evil. I would that they had a madness by which they succumbed, like this pale criminal. Verily I would that their madness were called truth, or fidelity, or justice, but they have their virtue in order to live long, and in wretched self-complacency. I am a railing alongside the torrent. Whoever is able to grasp me may grasp me. Your crutch, however, I am not. Thus spake Zarathustra. 7. Reading and Writing. Of all that is written, I love only what a person hath written with his blood. Write with blood, and thou wilt find that blood is spirit. It is no easy task to understand unfamiliar blood. I hate the reading idlers. He who knoweth the reader doeth nothing more for the reader. Another century of readers, and spirit itself will stink. Everyone being allowed to learn to read ruineth in the long run not only writing but also thinking. Once spirit was God, then it became man, and now it even becometh populace. He that writeth in blood and proverbs doth not want to be read, but learnt by heart. In the mountains the shortest way is from peak to peak, but for that route thou must have long legs. Proverbs should be peaks, and those spoken to should be big and tall. The atmosphere rare and pure, danger near, and the spirit full of a joyful wickedness. Thus are things well matched. I want to have goblins about me, for I am courageous. The courage which scareth away ghosts createth for itself goblins. It wanteth to laugh. I no longer feel in common with you. The very cloud which I see beneath me, the blackness and heaviness at which I laugh, this is your thundercloud. Ye look aloft when ye long for exaltation, and I look downward because I am exalted. Who among you can at the same time laugh and be exalted? He who climbeth on the highest mountains laugheth at all tragic plays and tragic realities. Courageous, unconcerned, scornful, coercive, so wisdom wisheth us. She is a woman, and ever loveth only a warrior. Ye tell me, life is hard to bear. But for what purpose should ye have your pride in the morning and your resignation in the evening? Life is hard to bear, but do not affect to be so delicate. We are all of us fine sumpter asses and assesses. What have we in common with the rosebud, which trembleth because a drop of dew hath formed upon it? It is true we love life, not because we are wont to live, but because we are wont to love. There is always some madness in love, but there is always also some method in madness. And to me also, who appreciate life, the butterflies and soap bubbles and whatever is like them amongst us seem most to enjoy happiness. To see these light, foolish, pretty, lively little sprites flit about, that moveth Zarathustra to tears and songs. I should only believe in a god that would know how to dance. And when I saw my devil, I found him serious, thorough, profound, solemn. He was the spirit of gravity. Through him all things fall. Not by wrath, but by laughter do we slay. Come, let us slay the spirit of gravity. I learned to walk. Since then have I let myself run. I learned to fly. since then I do not need pushing in order to move from a spot. Now am I light, now do I fly, now do I see myself under myself, now there danceth a god in me. Thus spake Zarathustra. 8. The Tree on the Hill. Zarathustra's eye had perceived that a certain youth avoided him, and as he walked alone one evening over the hill surrounding the town called the Pied Cow, behold, there found he the youth sitting leaning against a tree, and gazing with wearied look into the valley. Zarathustra thereupon laid hold of the tree beside which the youth sat, and spake thus, "If I wish to shake this tree with my hands, I should not be able to do so. But the wind, which we see not, troubleth and bendeth it as it listeth. We are sorest bent and troubled by invisible hands." Thereupon the youth arose disconcerted, and said, "I hear Zarathustra, and just now was I thinking of him." Zarathustra answered, "Why art thou frightened on that account? But it is the same with man as with the tree. The more he seeketh to rise into the height and light, the more vigorously do his roots struggle earthward, downward, into the dark and deep, into the evil."
"Yea, into the evil," cried the youth. "How is it possible that thou hast discovered my soul?"
Zarathustra smiled and said, "Many a soul one will never discover, unless one first invent it."
"Yea, into the evil," cried the youth once more.
"Thou saidst the truth, Zarathustra. I trust myself no longer, since I sought to rise into the height, and nobody trusteth me any longer. How doth that happen?" "I change too quickly. My today refuteth my yesterday. I often overleap the steps when I clamber. For so doing, none of the steps pardons me. When aloft, I find myself always alone. No one speaketh unto me. The frost of solitude maketh me tremble. What do I seek on the height? My contempt and my longing increase together. The higher I clamber, the more do I despise him who clambereth. What doth he seek on the height? How ashamed I am of my clambering and stumbling. How I mock at my violent panting. How I hate him who flieth. How tired I am on the height." Here the youth was silent, and Zarathustra contemplated the tree beside which they stood, and spake thus, "This tree standeth lonely here on the hills. It hath grown up high above man and beast. And if it wanted to speak, it would have none who could understand it. So high hath it grown. Now it waiteth and waiteth. For what doth it wait? It dwelleth too close to the seat of the clouds. It waiteth, perhaps, for the first lightning." When Zarathustra had said this, the youth called out with violent gestures, "Yea, Zarathustra, thou speakest the truth. My destruction I longed for when I desired to be on the height, and thou art the lightning for which I waited. Lo, what have I been since thou hast appeared amongst us? It is mine envy of thee that hath destroyed me." Thus spake the youth and wept bitterly. Zarathustra, however, put his arm about him and led the youth away with him. And when they had walked a while together, Zarathustra began to speak thus, "It rendeth my heart. Better than thy words express it, thine eyes tell me all thy danger. As yet thou art not free. Thou still seekest freedom. Too unslept hath thy seeking made thee, and too wakeful. On the open height wouldst thou be, for the stars thirsteth thy soul. But thy bad impulses also thirst for freedom. Thy wild dogs want liberty. They bark for joy in their cellar when thy spirit endeavoureth to open all prison doors. Still art thou a prisoner, it seemeth to me, who deviseth liberty for himself. Ah, sharp becometh the soul of such prisoners, but also deceitful and wicked. To purify himself is still necessary for the freedom of the spirit. Much of the prison and the mould still remaineth in him. Pure hath his eye still to become. Yea, I know thy danger, but by my love and hope I conjure thee, cast not thy love and hope away. Noble thou feelest thyself still, and noble others also feel thee still, though they bear thee a grudge and cast evil looks. Know this, that to everybody a noble one standeth in the way. Also to the good a noble one standeth in the way, and even when they call him a good man, they want thereby to put him aside. The new would the noble man create, and a new virtue. The old wanteth the good man, and that the old should be conserved. But it is not the danger of the noble man to turn a good man, but lest he should become a blusterer, a scoffer, or a destroyer. Ah, I have known noble ones who lost their highest hope, and then they disparaged all high hopes. Then lived they shamelessly in temporary pleasures, and beyond the day had hardly a name. Spirit is also voluptuousness, said they, then broke the wings of their spirit, and now it creepeth about, and defileth where it gnaweth. Once they thought of becoming heroes, but sensualists are they now. A trouble and a terror is the hero to them. But by my love and hope I conjure thee, cast not away the hero in thy soul. Maintain wholly thy highest hope. Thus spake Zarathustra. 9. The Preachers of Death. There are preachers of death, and the earth is full of those to whom desistance from life must be preached. Full is the earth of the superfluous. Marred is life by the many too many. May they be decoyed out of this life by the life eternal. The yellow ones, so are called the preachers of death, or the black ones, but I will show them unto you in other colours besides. There are the terrible ones who carry about in themselves the beast of prey, and have no choice except lusts or self-laceration, and even their lusts are self-laceration. They have not yet become men, those terrible ones. May they preach desistance from life, and pass away themselves. There are the spiritually consumptive ones. Hardly are they born when they begin to die, and long for doctrines of lassitude and renunciation. They would fain be dead, and we should approve of their wish. Let us beware of awakening those dead ones, and of damaging those living coffins. They meet an invalid, or an old man, or a corpse, and immediately they say, life is refuted. But they only are refuted, and their eye, which seeth only one aspect of existence. Shrouded in thick melancholy and eager for the little casualties that bring death, thus do they wait and clench their teeth. Or else they grasp at sweetmeats and mock at their childishness thereby. They cling to their straw of life and mock at their still clinging to it. Their wisdom speaketh thus, a fool, he who remaineth alive. But so far are we fools, and that is the foolishest thing in life. Life is only suffering, so say others, and lie not. Then see to it that ye cease. See to it that the life ceaseth, which is only suffering. And let this be the teaching of your virtue. Thou shalt slay thyself. Thou shalt steal away from thyself. Lust is sin, so say some who preach death. Let us go apart and beget no children. Giving birth is troublesome, say others. Why still give birth? One beareth only the unfortunate, and they also are preachers of death. Pity is necessary, so saith a third party. Take what I have, take what I am. So much less doth life bind me. Were they consistently pitiful, then would they make their neighbours sick of life. To be wicked, that would be their true goodness. But they want to be rid of life. What care they if they bind others still faster with their chains and gifts? And ye also, to whom life is rough labour and disquiet, are ye not very tired of life? Are ye not very ripe for the sermon of death? All ye to whom rough labour is dear, and the rapid, new, and strange, ye put up with yourselves badly. Your diligence is flight, and the will to self-forgetfulness. If ye believed more in life, then would ye devote yourselves less to the momentary, But for waiting ye have not enough of capacity in you, nor even for idling. Everywhere resoundeth the voices of those who preach death, and the earth is full of those to whom death hath to be preached, or life eternal. It is all the same to me, if only they pass away quickly. Thus spake Zarathustra. 10. War and Warriors. By our best enemies we do not want to be spared, nor by those either whom we love from the very heart. So let me tell you the truth. My brethren in war, I love you from the very heart. I am and was ever your counterpart, and I am also your best enemy. So let me tell you the truth. I know the hatred and envy of your hearts. Ye are not great enough not to know of hatred and envy. Then be great enough not to be ashamed of them. And if ye cannot be saints of knowledge, then, I pray you, be at least its warriors. They are the companions and forerunners of such saintship. I see many soldiers. Could I but see many warriors? Uniform, one calleth what they wear. May it not be uniform what they therewith hide. Ye shall be those whose eyes ever seek for an enemy, for your enemy. And with some of you there is hatred at first sight. Your enemy shall ye seek, your war shall ye wage, and for the sake of your thoughts, and if your thoughts succumb, your uprightness shall still shout triumph thereby. Ye shall love peace as a means to new wars, and the short peace more than the long. You I advise not to work, but to fight. You I advise not to peace, but to victory. Let your work be a fight. Let your peace be a victory. One can only be silent and sit peacefully when one hath arrow and bow. Otherwise one prateth and quarrelleth. Let your peace be a victory. Ye say it is the good cause which halloweth even war. I say unto you, it is the good war which halloweth every cause. War and courage have done more great things than charity. Not your sympathy, but your bravery hath hitherto saved the victims. What is good, ye ask? To be brave is good. Let the little girls say, to be good is what is pretty, and at the same time touching. They call you heartless, but your heart is true, and I love the bashfulness of your goodwill. Ye are ashamed of your flow, and others are ashamed of their ebb. Ye are ugly? Well then, my brethren, take the sublime about you, the mantle of the ugly. And when your soul becometh great, then doth it become haughty, and in your sublimity there is wickedness. I know you. In wickedness the haughty man and the weakling meet, but they misunderstand one another. I know you. Ye shall only have enemies to be hated, but not enemies to be despised. Ye must be proud of your enemies. Then the success of your enemies are also your successes. Resistance, that is the distinction of the slave. Let your distinction be obedience. Let your commanding itself be obeying. To the good warrior soundeth, thou shalt, pleasanter than I will, and all that is dear unto you ye shall first have it commanded unto you. Let your love to life be love to your highest hope, and let your highest hope be the highest thought of life. Your highest thought, however, ye shall have it commanded unto you by me, and it is this: man is something that is to be surpassed. So live your life of obedience and of war. What matter about long life? What warrior wisheth to be spared? I spare you not. I love you from my very heart, my brethren in war. Thus spake Zarathustra. 11. The New Idol. Somewhere there are still peoples and herds, but not with us, my brethren. Here there are states. A state? What is that? Well, open now your ears unto me, for now will I say unto you my word concerning the death of peoples. A state is called the coldest of all cold monsters. Coldly lieth it also, and this lie creepeth from its mouth. I, the state, am the people. It is a lie. Creators were they who created peoples, and hung a faith and a love over them. Thus they served life. Destroyers are they who lay snares for many, and call it the state. They hang a sword and 100 cravings over them. Where there is still a people, there the state is not understood, but hated as the evil eye, and as sin against laws and customs. This sign I give unto you. Every people speaketh its language of good and evil. This its neighbour understandeth not. Its language hath it devised for itself in laws and customs. But the state lieth in all languages of good and evil, and whatever it saith, it lieth, and whatever it hath stolen. False is everything in it. With stolen teeth it biteth the biting one. False are even its bowels. Confusion of language of good and evil, this sign I give unto you as the sign of the state. Verily, the will to death indicateth this sign. Verily, it beckoneth unto the preachers of death. Many too many are born, for the superfluous ones was the state devised. See just how it enticeth them to it, the many too many, how it swalloweth and cheweth and re-cheweth them. On earth there is nothing greater than I. It is I who am the regulating finger of God. Thus roareth the monster. And not only the long-eared and short-sighted fall upon their knees. Ah, even in your ears, ye great souls, it whispereth its gloomy lies. Ah, it findeth out the rich hearts which willingly lavish themselves. Yea, it findeth you out too, ye conquerors of the old God. Weary ye became of the conflict, and now your weariness serveth the new idol. Heroes and honourable ones, it would fain set up around it the new idol. Gladly it basketh in the sunshine of good consciences, the cold monster. Everything will it give you, if ye worship it, the new idol. Thus it purchaseth the lustre of your virtue, and the glance of your proud eyes. It seeketh to allure by means of you the many too many. Yea, a hellish artifice hath here been devised, a death-horse jingling with the trappings of divine honours. Yea, a dying for many hath here been devised, which glorifieth itself as life. Verily a hearty service unto all preachers of death. The state, I call it, where all are poison drinkers, the good and the bad. The state, where all lose themselves, the good and the bad. The state where the slow suicide of all is called life. Just see these superfluous ones. They steal the works of the inventors and the treasures of the wise. Culture, they call their theft, and everything becometh sickness and trouble unto them. Just see these superfluous ones. Sick are they always. They vomit their bile and call it a newspaper. They devour one another, and cannot even digest themselves. Just see these superfluous ones. Wealth they acquire and become poorer thereby. Power they seek for, and above all, the lever of power, much money. These impotent ones. See them clamber, these nimble apes. They clamber over one another, and thus scuffle into the mud and the abyss. Towards the throne they all strive. It is their madness, as if happiness sat on the throne. Oft times sitteth filth on the throne, and oft times also the throne on filth. Madmen they all seem to me, and clambering apes, and too eager. Badly smelleth their idol to me, the cold monster. Badly they all smell to me, these idolaters. My brethren, will ye suffocate in the fumes of their maws and appetites? Better break the windows and jump into the open air. Do go out of the way of the bad odour, withdraw from the idolatry of the superfluous. Do go out of the way of the bad odour, withdraw from the steam of these human sacrifices.